in radio and television. It's RCA all the way. The Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Magic Key turns. 107 leading stations from coast to coast in the United States, in Canada, in Cuba, and in Hawaii are linked together to bring you this full hour of radio entertainment. Your host is the family of RCA, whose members include RCA Victor, RCA Institutes, Radio Marine, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company. Today, the Radio Corporation of America invites you to listen to three members of the world-famous musical Flagstad family of Norway. Karen Marie Flagstad, Kirsten Flagstad, and their mother, Madame Marie Flagstad. An inimitable actor, author, and wit, Alexander Wolcott. The Golden Gate Jubilee Quartet, singers of Southern songs. Linton Wells talking with Wallace Carroll, chief of the Geneva News Bureau of the United Press, aboard the United States liner Washington. And Frank Black, who opens the program, conducting the Magic Key Orchestra in the Caprice de Nanette from Coleridge Taylor's Petite Suite.
Thank you. few months ago, four young Dixie singers drove up from Charlotte, North Carolina, to make their radio network debut as guests on our program. In their case, the magic key opened wide the door of opportunity, for the Golden Gate Jubilee Quartet is now a regular radio feature, and its Bluebird records made by Victor are among the most popular novelties of the day. You're invited to listen as they bring you a favorite popular song titled Life of the Party.
You do to be the best of the party. You do to be the best of the party.
Golden Gate Jubilee Quartet telling you about the darkness on the Delta.
Now when there's darkness on the Delta, that's the time of my hardest life.
When there's darkness on the Delta, just let me linger in general life.
See the cotton come all around me. Chillin', singin' low. But I'm happy, to find me good low. With the muddy Mississippi water flow. I'm slavin' on the levee, listening to the night and day. Way up above, I'm just slavin' on the levee. But no one's heart is heavy, cause all goes chillin' good.
Here is an unusual Golden Gate Jubilee Quartet arrangement of the Dipsy Doodle.
Bum, 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 bum jumped away, the cow hey diddle. That's the way the ditch do.
Now we do think you're crazy.
You can make your mother did say do.
But it's not your mind that's hazy. Is you don't get both much of you, don't you hear me? Baby, listen, you try to be good. Try to do all the things you should. If you do, you'll get you someday. You think you're great, the things you say.
Like a red dumb god I, and hot am I. That's the way the ditch do. The ditch do is the thing that we read. The ditch do is getting your hand. And if you get you, it can be worse. But what you say will come on you first. Like a little dumb guy and a mean dog in. That's the way the ditch do is first. The ditch do is easy to find. As long as it's always in the back of your mind. You never know it before it's too late. And then you're in such a twinkle state. Like the moon jumped over the cowhead hill. That's the way the ditch do is first. Now we do think you're looking. You to be the one that it's a deal. But it's not your mind, it's cuckoo. Ain't you talk
and vote, don't you do it, don't you hear me? Make it a reason, try to be good. Try to do all the things you should. Just do it, get you one day. Think of the things you say.
Like a red dumb cut out, and hot am I. That's the way the ditch do. The ditch do, the ditch do, the thing will be bad.
The United States Line's fastest passenger boats have recently installed shortwave radio speech equipment as part of their service. Now aboard the liner Washington, 2,200 miles at sea, is Wallace Carroll, chief of the Geneva News Bureau of the United Press. Here in New York is our Magic Key commentator, Linton Wells, ready to talk with Mr. Carroll in the first transoceanic broadcast ever made from the liner Washington. The Magic Key turns to Linton Wells.
Hello, United States Liner Washington. Is Wallace Carroll there? Linton Wells speaking.
Hello, Lint. This is Carroll. What's on your mind?
I want to talk over the European situation with you. Wally, you've been reporting Europe for 9 years. How do you feel about what's happening over there? Pessimistic or optimistic?
Well, neither pessimistic nor optimistic. I don't believe there will be a general European war for at least 2 years. It may even be held off many more years. But, of course, European misunderstandings and jealousies appear to be grave enough to make another conflict almost inevitable eventually.
But, Wally, many believe the slow-burning fuses now leading to Europe's political powder magazines justify a belief that the big explosion may occur before 1940. Events are moving so rapidly that even the map of Europe changes from month to month.
Well, explosions are always possible at any time. But here is one factor to consider. Germany is the nation which is changing the map of Europe today, and most Europeans will tell you that even if Germany should desire to start an offensive war, her army wouldn't be strong enough before the summer of 1940. The Germans are said to lack medium and heavy artillery, motor transport, and reserve war stocks, as well as reserve officers. It will take a couple of years to fill these gaps. At the same time, the British are spending billions on armaments, and they won't be at full strength for another 2 years.
Do you feel that Hitler can rely upon Italy's military strength to back him up?
That's one of the great riddles of European politics today. Mussolini says the Rome-Berlin axis stands intact. At the same time, he is seeking better relations with England. Thus, in case of war, it seems that Italy can take sides with either Britain or Germany.
But don't you think that such an Italian agreement with England would mean the collapse of the Bern-Rome-Tokyo axis?
Well, not necessarily. Mussolini apparently does not intend to burn the bridges between Rome and Berlin right now, nor between Rome and Tokyo either.
But suppose the Rome-Berlin-Tokyo axis were broken by an Italo-British understanding. Wouldn't Germany be left out on the end of a limb?
Germany would certainly be without a strong ally in Europe. Hitler would still have a powerful military machine, and the Germans think that this would attract other allies to Germany's side.
Do you think that Germany intends to absorb Czechoslovakia as she did Austria?
I don't think so. The annexation of Austria by Germany was considered inevitable by most European statesmen and by many American correspondents in Europe. The outright annexation of Czechoslovakia would be a much more complicated problem, as Hitler knows. France and Soviet Russia have agreed to help the Czechs against a possible German aggression. And Czechoslovakia, unlike Austria, would probably fight. I therefore think that the Germans will not march directly into Czechoslovakia as they marched into Austria. But don't forget Hitler's repeated statements that Germans in all parts of the world belong to the Reich. And there are 3.5 million Germans in Czechoslovakia.
He heard of Germany and Poland coming to an agreement along the following lines. The lines being that Poland would return to Germany that strip of land known as the Polish Corridor, which separates Germany and East Prussia. In return, Germany would give Poland guarantees of at least Polish domination of Lithuania and complete control of the Baltic port of Memel.
As you know, Poland and Germany have very friendly relations. The Polish Foreign Minister, Colonel Beck, prides himself on being a realist. And he might therefore be willing to liquidate the dangerous Polish corridor problem if it could be done on a satisfactory basis. But I doubt whether Poland would be willing to give up the corridor with its large Polish population in exchange for a shadowy title to Lithuania.
After 4 years at Geneva, Wally, do you think that the League of Nations is completely dead or just dying?
Well, withdrawals from the League have weakened it as a guarantee against war. But still, the League is doing very useful work in other fields, such as checking the drug traffic, improving standards of health throughout the world, and solving certain economic problems. It could even settle some political quarrels if Britain, France, and other members acted together under the League covenant.
Assuming, of course, that Italy, Germany, and Japan agreed to re-enter the League and play ball.
Naturally, if Italy, Germany, and Japan came back and played ball, the League would be more effective. But even without them, the League could settle minor political disputes. Of course, there is little likelihood that the fascist powers will return to Geneva in the near future. In fact, Hitler said recently that Germany would never re-enter the League, and Rome and Tokyo have also said that they were through with Geneva.
Wally, do you think the course of history might have been changed if the United States had entered the League originally?
Not necessarily, Lint. It is true that the United States would have given the League more strength, but our joining the League would certainly not have made Germany, Italy, Japan, and the other powers any more satisfied than they are now with their present boundaries.
By the way, Wally, what sort of a crossing have you had?
We've just had 2 days of the roughest weather I've ever seen, but the Washington is a good steady ship, and I think we'll have clear sailing from now on.
That's good. And now for a very important last question. In this, the first broadcast in which the transatlantic liner Washington has participated. From your point of vantage at international headquarters in Geneva, what's the prospect of America being drawn into the inevitable European war?
That will depend on how resolutely the American people are determined to stay out of war. You can be certain that when war comes, every European power will want the United States to be fighting on its side and will do its best to draw the United States in. It will be up to the American people to make their choice when war comes.
And every American hopes the choice will be against war, Wally. And now, here's to many more great news beats of Geneva and au revoir.
Many thanks, Lint, and au revoir.
You've just heard a two-way news interview between Linton Wells in New York and Wallace Carroll, chief of the Geneva News Bureau of the United Press, aboard the United States liner Washington, 2,200 miles at sea.
Frank Black and the Magic Key Orchestra bring us the lively and graceful Scherzo in E minor by Mendelssohn. Thank you. On several occasions in the past, we have been honored to present to you, as guest of the Magic Key, the great Metropolitan Opera Company soprano and beloved Victor recording artist, Kirsten Flagstad. Today we are triply honored, and we would like Madame Flagstad to tell you about it herself. Madame Kirsten Flagstad.
When I last appeared on the Magic Key early in January, I had one of the greatest thrills of my life. At that time, I talked over the radio with my sister, Karen Marie Flagstad, and you heard her voice in America for the first time as she sang from our home in Oslo, Norway. Now, my sister has taken a vacation from her engagements in Europe, and she has brought our mother away from her music classes in Oslo, so they could pay me a visit over here. And so today, I'm very happy to introduce my sister to you in her first appearance in America. My sister, Karen Marie Flagstad. Karen Marie sings for you the Johann Strauss favorite, Springtime in the Air, from the musical comedy The Three Waltzes.
For April, the Easter month, Victor Records offer Bach's immortal work, The Passion of Our Lord According to St. Matthew, magnificently performed by the Boston Symphony Orchestra with Sergei Koussevitzky conducting and assisted by the Harvard Glee Club and Radcliffe Choral Society. Another notable new Victor recording is Wagner's Prelude and Good Friday Spell from Parsifal, one of the most distinguished performances in the repertoire of Leopold Stokowski and the Philadelphia Orchestra. And these are just two of the 30 new Victor, Red Seal, and popular releases for April. But before you can enjoy Victor Records, you must have an instrument to play them on. Through a remarkable new organization, the Victor Record Society, you may now have that instrument, an RCA Victor record player, a new RCA Victor record player at no extra cost. The RCA Victor record player attaches to your radio and enables you to play Victor records through the loudspeaker. Now, here is all you have to do. Go to your nearest RCA Victor music dealer and enroll in the Victor Record Society. Pay your membership fee of $6 and also select $9 worth of Victor records, any records you choose. Then, at absolutely no further cost to you, the famous RCA Victor record player, the instrument regularly listing for $14.95, which converts your radio into a splendid phonograph radio, becomes your own. But that's not all. As a member, you are eligible to receive Victor Record dividends, which eventually equal the entire cost of your membership. You also receive a year's subscription to the monthly Victor Record Society Review. The Victor Record Society's membership is growing by leaps and bounds. See your RCA Victor music dealer tomorrow. Listen for the familiar NBC chimes, your signal for fine radio entertainment.
Key turns, opening the door to a world of entertainment. In this second half of our program, the family of RCA presents for your interest and pleasure three members of the world-famous musical Flagstad family of Norway, Karen Marie Flagstad, Kirsten Flagstad, and their mother, Madame Marie Flagstad. The inimitable actor, author, and wit, Alexander Wolcott, and Frank Black conducting the Magic Key Orchestra. Frank Black, General Music Director of the National Broadcasting Company, conducts the Magic Key Orchestra in a medley of waltzes of Johann Strauss.
Thank you. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Alexander Wolcott. The Town Crier.
This is Wolcott speaking. The Town Crier striking a new note. From dawn till midnight, the air is full of voices trying to sell you something. But here, for a change, is a voice. I refer to the battered old wind instrument now addressing you. Here's the voice of one who wants to buy. I'm on the air today because there's something I want you to sell me. If through this broadcast I find the thing I'm after, I stand ready to pay through the nose. A term I've never quite understood, but it correctly suggests a painful process. It might be better to call this an unfamiliar note rather than a new one. To be exact, it's not new, and no one knows that better than I do. Because in a broadcast 4 or 5 years ago, it was on another network of which I forget the name, I did try to buy something and had to spend the next 4 weeks digging myself out from under the avalanche of unforeseen consequences. That time, the thing I sought was the first book of Gibson drawings, published in 1894. For several years, both here and in England, I had ransacked the second-hand bookstores in my vain quest of it. Then one night, I put my notice on the air. At the time, I made it as clear as words of one syllable can do it, that anyone in America who still had that book and was willing to part with it should not send it to me without first writing to state the terms. Yet within 2 weeks, I was buried under more than 1,000 volumes of assorted drawings by various artists, which I hadn't asked for, didn't want, and wouldn't have accepted as a gift. Today, however, I seek an article so much rarer that I feel sure I'm now unleashing no such flood. But as a precaution, let me repeat that if this broadcast does bring to light the thing I'm after, I ask only that the person finding it will report to me by mail instead of sending it direct. I'm after something I can make use of in a spiritual adventure in which I am now engaged. I'm looking for something that will aid me in a jail delivery. It will help me break loose from that narrow, cheerless cell over the door of which is written a single word. The word is now. Help me escape, that is, from that strong and crowded prison which we call the present. There are people, this is no longer seriously disputed even in the academic world, there are people who, at uncertain times and for a short distance only, can see into the future. My eyes, however, are peering in the opposite direction, straining at a task which is not much easier. It's difficult, you think, to look into the future, that's true. But mark you, it's no cinch to look into the past. For reasons of my own, reasons too complicated to crowd into this broadcast, too intimate to state in so public a place, for reasons of my own, I wish to revisit the world I knew when I was 8 years old, a time when more than half of those now listening to me had not yet been even thought of. Have you ever revisited the world as it was when you were 8? The road back is not clearly marked. It may take you a long time to get there. You'll have to go alone. So easy to lose the path, and no one can point the way. All I'm willing to do, all I can do, is suggest one method which some have found effective. The year you were 8 years old, do you recall where you were living then? The town, the street, the house? You do? Very well. Take a quiet hour out of every day in your present life. Shut out the world around you. Close your eyes and go back to that house. Take one room in it. The living room, I should think. Your own, perhaps. Is there a chair in it you remember? Sit in that chair. Look around you. Do you remember where the doors were? The windows? That closet? What was against the wall there? A piano? What hung over it? Can you remember? Try to remember. You can't? Try tomorrow, then. It'll come, bit by bit. As a photographic plate is developed in a dark room, the look, the very smell of that room will emerge from the mist. Then, little by little, sounds will fill the house. You may hear in the hall a long-forgotten voice. Through the chenille portieres will come someone you had not thought of in years. Don't get up. Wait, wait. Is that your mother's step upon the stairs? As a staff will aid any wayfarer, so it would help me if I could actually hold in my hands something that was part of the life of the 8-year-old boy I used to be. And I know what would help me most. Something I used to read, but also, and this is all important, something I've had no chance to see since. I know what fills that bill for me. The stacked up copies of the magazine for which I used to wait so impatiently every week that I would run out to meet the postman halfway down the block. Harper's Young People. What I'm willing to pay for handsomely is the bound volume of Harper's Young People as it came to our house in 1894 and 5. The volume numbered 16. The period when it meant most to me. Harper's Young People, when I was 8 years old. I can't begin to tell you in what a lather of excitement I waited for each issue. In this age, when entertainment grows on every bush, in this easy age of Dick Tracy and Donald Duck, I wonder if any kid can enjoy anything as much as Harper's Young People was enjoyed by those who were 8 in 1895. Of course, bound volumes of that period are scattered all over America. I'm sure that here and there a copy of the one I want, number 16, stands dusty and neglected on some shelf from which it has not been taken down in years. You suppose it could be among those shabby books that were moved up in the attic after Aunt Minnie died? You might go up and look. It'll come to light, if at all, in some such hideaway. I do not look to find it in a big city. Not in New York, certainly. Here, where yesterday is always hastily rubbed out as if it were a dirty word written in chalk on the sidewalk. Here, no one stays put long enough to accumulate anything. New York. If New Yorkers want to see the stars, they have to go to the planetarium. If they want to see the past, they must look in a museum. New York. The city without any attics. So my Harper's Young People, yes, mine, the 1895 volume, is waiting for me elsewhere. I wonder where. If you know, please write me. Write me care of the National Broadcasting Company, New York, or try writing me at my home. The address, I add boastfully, is Vermont. Just Vermont. 1895. All manner of sounds and smells can bring that year back to me. Bring me back to it. The whir of a lawnmower. The sound the cable cars used to make. The clop, clop, clop of hoofbeats on asphalt. The smell of syringa. The scent of new-made bread. I'm back in our living room. It's twilight, and from the veranda of the house opposite comes the sound of young folks. Voices. Some of them have long been still. What is that they are singing? Oh, yes. I remember. I don't want to play in your yard. I don't like you anymore. You'll be sorry when you see me sliding down our cellar door. You can't holler down our rain barrel. You can't climb our apple tree. I don't want to play in your yard if you won't be good to me. Well, Madam Flagstaff, do you think you can get me a job at the Net? No? Ah, well. Let me in parting leave this word with whatever person finds the book I'm after. The word is, don't forget to write. And so I go my way to the strains of another 1895 tune. What is it? I used to hear it on the hurdy-gurdy. Everybody played it. I know it as well as I know my own name. Oh, yes. The Sunshine of Paradise Alley.
Karen Marie Flagstad, making her first appearance in America, returns to our program. Miss Flagstad sings Clara Edwards' lovely ballad, By the Bend of the River. Now we are highly honored in being able to unite on our Magic Key program three members of the famous Flagstad family. Fru Marie Flagstad, noted as the musical mama of Norway, joins her two brilliant daughters, Karen Marie and Kirsten. Again, I'm going to ask Madame Kirsten Flagstad to tell us about their song.
First, my sister Karen Maria and I sing the old, old Norwegian folk song, Eg ser deg ut for gluggen. At the piano is our mother, who gave us both our first music lessons. This song tells about a pretty peasant girl who leans out of her window to talk to her sweetheart. The girl tells her lover that if he gets cold feet, he had better go and get warm with the cows. For her father, the big bad wolf is in the house.
Ich ser deg ut for
We sing for you another folk song of our Norwegian homeland, Ola Glomstulen. This is a humorous song about a very stingy bachelor who is soon to be married. He tells his housekeeper to make plenty of sausage for the guests, although he provides her with only one stringy little goat. And he tells her to make plenty of beer, although he gives her only one thimbleful of malt. We sing Ola Glomstulen.
The Magic Key turns now to bring you a special message from the head of the family of RCA. Mr. David Sarnoff, president of the Radio Corporation of America, presided last week at the annual meeting of RCA stockholders. During the course of his address, Mr. Sarnoff paid tribute to the public services of radio. Mr. Sarnoff said, in part, "Radio has become one of the most vital factors in the relations between all nations. The course of world-shaking events across the Atlantic as well as the Pacific, increases from day to day the importance of the far-flung services of the Radio Corporation of America to the peace, the progress, and the prosperity of the United States. The direct contact which RCA communications facilities afford with 43 foreign countries is an important factor in our international relationships. In time of war, these facilities would be indispensable as an arm of our national defense. And in times of peace, they are of vital importance in helping to guarantee not only the unhampered communication between our government and foreign states, but also to keep those same avenues of communication open for our newspapers, financial institutions, business enterprises, and our people generally. The NBC has put into service its newest high-powered shortwave broadcast transmitter at Bound Brook, New Jersey, equipped with the finest developments of RCA research. The daily shortwave programs of the NBC to foreign countries, which cover 18 hours a day and are broadcast in six different languages, serve as an ambassador of goodwill every day of the year. Through both our national and international services, day-by-day assistance is rendered to many branches of our government, including the Departments of State, War, Navy, Interior, Commerce, and Agriculture. Messages by the President of the United States and departmental officials are broadcast as a regular part of the NBC's operations. These facts, however, tell only a part of the story of how radio serves the public interest, convenience, and necessity. As a matter of fact, radio provides a nonpartisan public service without parallel in history. It is the greatest gift of education, culture, and entertainment ever presented to more than 100 million people. Radio has broken down age-long barriers of distance and isolation. It has brought civilizing and socializing influences to every American home. At the same time, radio in the United States functions on the American principles of private ownership and competition. In our land, there is no monopoly in radio broadcasting or in the radio industry. The members of the RCA family are proud to have pioneered in a new field which now represents one of the most vital of America's free and democratic institutions. Black and the Magic Key Orchestra have just played the Chardot from the Capella Ballet Suite of Delibes. The members of the family of RCA, RCA Victor, RCA Institutes, Radio Marine, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company invite you to tune in at this same time next Sunday for another full hour of radio entertainment. At that time, you will hear the great Wagnerian tenor of the Metropolitan Opera Company, Lauritz Melchior, the distinguished American actress, Eva Le Gallien, in a dramatic tribute commemorating the birthday of Shakespeare. Linton Wells, the Magic Key commentator, in a two-way interview with A.M. Purcell, managing editor of the Royal Gazette in Bermuda, and Frank Black conducting the Magic Key Orchestra. Milton Cross speaking for all the services of the Radio Corporation of America.
And Ben Grauer saying that in radio and television, it's RCA all the way.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.